対ない。
偏屈で頑固親父。でも私はそんなおじちゃんが好きだった。別々に住むようになってからも。
ひろこ急ぎなさい、僕の時間よ。
分かってるって。
ちゃんとお夕飯の時間に置いてこないからよ。
Yes, Virginia, how are you? Well, we just got our power back this morning after 7 days of no power. My feet are still freezing, but we're thawing at least. Bad enough, yeah. Well, we went this morning was the 7th, and we kind of reached our limits.
Title of this thing. No title
again. Is it rolling, Bob?
Check. Check, check, check. This might be another one of those strange voice recordings because I'm in my office. Listening to something my son turned me on to, Trent Mueller. He loves the guy's work, and this is the latest CD. It's great. It's really good. That's number two, son. That's Chuck. I don't know where I leave off on these podcasts, you know. I mean, I can't remember what I've said, what I haven't said, what I thought I said, what I meant to say. I think there was a point I left it. I left him at home to put up a Christmas tree. And, of course, when I came home, sat in the driveway for a moment, I thought, okay, now, is that tree up and was the job done or is it not? And the only reason I'd raise the question as I sort of have a sinking feeling the one job didn't get done. And I walked in, looked around the corner where the tree should be, and there was a Christmas tree stand and no tree. And it just made me laugh because it was really funny. Didn't quite get the tree up, but the stand was there. The tree couldn't be found, apparently, and I had suggested a few places, and I don't know if the tree was there or not there, or even if I've already told you this story, but it was funny. And he has long since forgiven any annoyances. Communication has been good, thanks really largely to this ice storm. Really had an impact on us, you know? And the Christmas holiday and the times. And I'm glad about that. I'm just happy that gradually communication gets a little better, a little better. Over breakfast the other day at the Bendel Diner, you know, more talk, subjects not normally talked about, and it's been very good. I feel we're growing closer. This is my number one son and I, my number two son and I. Number one son and I are growing further apart, but in a good way, just because he's living his own life. Like, we didn't even exchange greetings at Christmas time. Now, some of you would say, oh, my God, that's terrible. But we didn't have to, you know. He had had a very good one, gone off to a church for the first time, 100-year-old church, and listened to choir as my candlelight, which was lovely. And we had our special Christmas with no power and no light, just candles and talking. So the ice storm of 2013 was certainly a plus for me. Still don't have any internet at home. That'll be another week. So that'll be full 2 weeks for my son without gaming or anything else. Almost as if God looked down on just us, this one family, and said, you know, might not do that boy any harm to have the internet taken away for a couple of weeks. But of course, God doesn't like it, doesn't work in those ways. I do have this discussion. I think I mentioned that too, didn't we do that? Yeah, Christmas Eve, talked about God, the meaning of God, and the three of us with very different views. We're three very different people living in that house, I'll tell you. Now, all this leads up to my point now. which is John posted a comment. John from Michigan. He's posted a few comments. In fact, he's the only guy posting comments. Thank you, John. It reminded me I hadn't replied or commented on his comments, and he was right to point that out to me because, as I said, I needed that little poke. And he just posted another one today, just an hour ago, which has prompted me to start this podcast. But along the lines of, you know, just a little more information about the Beats and the hippies and maybe when it began, when it ended, and who was involved, and just some thoughts about that to exchange. And I would like to share that. And what's interesting about it is just yesterday, I think, as we sat at the dining or kitchen table eating soup and craft dinner, which my wife made. Oh my God, was that a Freudian slip? My wife made different. I make it stovetop in the pot. She makes it microwave in a glass bowl. Now her way turns out to be fine, but I'm just looking and say, hey, almost like, hey, that's the thing I do. That's my job. Make the craft dinners. I can do that. But no, she had her way, and just, no, it's different, you know. And it didn't develop into an argument, but it was just clear, no, we do have differences, you know. And just, you know, it turned out, of course, her way was excellent. She knew it would be, as I should have known. I'm sitting in my office, and I'm staring at the yellow wall, and there's a poster of the Beatles that's sort of fallen down. It's sitting on a little table full of SAT books, some information, and that cloth, that Nigerian webbed cloth that I have covering the table. But it's wonderful to look at the Beatles against the yellow wall. Now, this isn't a digression. This is just that my wife asked me as we were having that lunch, and I'm sitting there reading the book that I have in my hand right now, The Vanity of Doulos, Jack Kerouac. And she's saying, she asks the question in such a way that I misinterpret and think, oh, it's a judgmental statement, like she's being critical here. And of course, this was my perception and not necessarily the way the question was asked at all. I just perceived it that way. But why do you find those people so fascinating? And like I said, I chose to make that a loaded question rather than just give a good answer. So I pushed back with a little bit of emotion. Ask myself that same question here. What is it that makes me care so much? Because it was interesting, her having a different view and sort of seeing the bigger picture in a Japanese sense of the community at large is what shapes man. The community is important. And I'm talking about heroes who have, you know, jabbed spikes into the community. Timothy Leary and Jack Kerouac and Henry Miller and Allen Ginsberg. And these people who I love are rebels in that sense of just, hey, there's something wrong with the community. It needs to be poked. So it was interesting having these two very different views, you know. And I think it's important to keep in mind, as humans, they were deeply flawed. Kerouac was a mess. He certainly tried hard and succeeded very, you know, far be it from me to vouch an opinion. Of course, that's the other thing about my wife. She says I'm very judgmental, that I sort of take a stand, think it's right, and think therefore that every other opinion must be wrong. Like, for example, the fact that I seem to worship the Beats, and I don't really, but, you know, think they're very important and speak highly of them. Want to further publicize them. She thinks I'm just sort of forcing a view on people that if anybody doesn't get the Beats or like the Beats or understand the Beats or their significance, that I'm kind of passing judgment, that somehow my opinion is better than anyone who doesn't share my view. But I think, don't we all do that? Surely, if you talk about... I don't want to single out any names here. You know who I'm talking about. But feeling strongly about your opinions, you have to. What's the point of having an opinion if you don't believe it? So I do think these guys were important. I think it was, you know, conformity can be a dangerous thing, because who's to say it's being led by the right people, or, you know, that you're marching down the right path. Hey, come on. Look at Berlin, 1938. Those beautiful flags. I have a National Geographic magazine, Berlin, 1938. And man, does it ever look beautiful, the way the buildings are up, and you think of from the devastation of post-World War I to this point it's reached. How could you not have be full of nationalist pride? And, of course, we see things like that in... I was going to say America, but America is such a divided nation, and it still is. You think about Civil War, and you think now it has to be a divided nation of people with very different opinions. And you can go back to Vietnam and say those for and those against, but I think the against outnumbered the fors, but people just kind of went along with it because, hey, there are bad guys out there and people are telling us we have to fight them. So, John, if this was one of the questions, my answer back is yes, people have to be vigilant and people have to think for themselves. You know, this is what Leary said. Think for yourself, question authority. Well, damn it, he was right. And if you don't buy that, I just don't get you. Question authority. Where is it coming from and why? Who's issuing the orders here? You know, my standby is always, you know, there was a law against cunnilingus. Trudeau changed that. Said, well, the nation has no business in the bedrooms of the people, you know, something along that line, which is probably why he's a hero of Dave Brodbeck. On top of which, he was very intelligent. Trudeau, I meant, but of course, you know Dave is. Dave's a fun guy. I'm glad to know Dave, and what an honor to be able to spend a weekend with the family. I don't say that to brag. I say this to my wife. Well, here's another example. Here's another example. I'm at the office. I'm listening to... I'm just leaving the office. I guess driving home, listening to CBC 2. And it's sort of a jazz blues hour, I guess. Yeah, blues. I can't even remember the guy's name. A couple of hours show. And anyway, he says, later on, we're going to have some tunes by Van Morrison. From a concert in San Francisco, live in San Francisco. Ooh, that sounds good, but it's not for another hour and a half or something. Well, I get home that night, I have supper, and then after supper, I think, hey, since we don't have TV now, but we do have that nice tuner, the nice Sony tuner and speakers, I've been turning on the radio and listening to the living room, which is a beautiful change, again, thanks to the ice storm, from... watching TV every night, just turn it on 5:36 and just leave it on till it's bedtime, you know. That's what I've been doing. So instead, listening to the radio, and sure enough, same station, it's preset 94.1 CBC2, listening to this live Van Morrison, and holy shit, it's good. It's really good. So I post on the internet, I just post a little tweet. Wow. Listening to Van Morrison live concert on CBC. Fantastic, you know, something like that. I don't have it here. If you're a historian, look it up. It's on Twitter, under the Scarborough Dude! ! And so I post this, but I do a little research. I go online. Hey, maybe I could buy that. I go to iTunes. Hey, it's not there. It's not listed. So I go somewhere else. I go online, I Google it. Holy shit, there are copies on Amazon. $160? What is this? This is insane. Why would anything be $160? And why has the music stopped? Maybe the computer's just gone to sleep. Hang on. Now where were we? Before I let technology interfere with our conversation. One of the dangers of today, of course, constantly being interrupted. Now, what was the thread? I was explaining something to John. It's just been one of those near-perfect days. A day I needed to give myself. I really needed to give myself a day. And here it is, 2013, the end of it, December 30th, in my office. I came in because I had to pay the federal government $4,200 in tax. Corporate tax. I had worked all this out with my accountant yesterday and been coming in, doing that, taking care of business. And then my transfer limit. I shouldn't be telling you all this, really, should I? Ugh, call a bank manager, change the transfer limit, you know. Find out how to get on the CRA website and pay the bill. But after I'd paid the bill and I'm done, accepted receipt. Okay, now, it's my day, you know. Head next door to the Sea Spray restaurant and grab some Mabo Tofu for lunch, $6.20. What a great deal. Excellent. Always the same. Always good. Lots of tofu. Hot, spicy. Back here, and then a chat with Rob in Singapore. Singapore Sam. About me visiting him in Thailand someday. Because that's on my mind. And, good conversation, you know, private channel through Facebook. Then the comment from John, me, trying to explain to you about the Beats. And of course, you can tell, man, that guy must be high because his answers are all over the place. And that's kind of the thing the Beats did. And so those circumstances, paying off the feds, doing something responsible, responding to comments on my blog, chatting with my son by phone. I had to get him to get me the sum I owed and the my CRA number, corporate number, corporate tax number, which he had to find in this bundle of papers, and me sort of guiding him. And anyway, the sense that Chuck and I have enjoyed better communication lately, this is good. The fact that I've got this office and still have it, it's my escape. How wonderful it was during the ice storm, and how glad I am to have it now as a little place. And of course, the rent's now low now that we're splitting it three ways. It's working beautifully. There's something in my life that is all good. Things are just humming along so nicely, and yet it's just surprising how often I don't see that. I don't feel that. I don't get that. I don't acknowledge that. I'm so, so, so fortunate. And I know. So much of the world suffers. You see, I think the Beats knew that, too. I don't even want to compare the Beats and the hippies, because the hippies, by and large, were shallow. What's the word? People who just want pleasure. Hedonists, I guess. There was a movement, but the movement wasn't a hippie movement. It wasn't the hippies that brought an end to the war in Vietnam. It was actual protesters, people who were politically motivated, who cared, who had moral judgment, moral values. And most of the hippies didn't. Let's just get high and listen to music. It's cool. It's fun. Let's play. Let's be children again. And it was other people pushing back, you know, at the police, at the government, at the at industry, and still are. It's just still a minority of people who are sort of raising their voices up and saying, hey, are you really, truly satisfied with the world you're living in? Is this truly, is your society, is your culture truly the best it can be? Is this truly what you want? Are our lives not being shaped by forces that we know are wrong when we think of the sex in advertising? We think of just pressure, we think of conformity, we think of buy your sweaters at the Gap, you know, and I know there are other points, other viewpoints, you know, my wife's for one, and if I'm just talking and not doing anything, perhaps I'm being a very, very, a phony. If I don't actually live my life in some different way, some way that acknowledges or that puts my opinions to the test. I like to think this podcast is. I like to think I am trying something of value. something important. I mean, I think I did with the Dixon Jane zines. I tried, I failed, but I tried. It's only when I get high, though. It's only when I have a toke that I realize what I'm doing is right. And that's a strange thing, you know. That's a... Oh, man. That can't be good. But the fact is, I'm right now very happy about a lot of things. And we'll continue this. My plan for the day was to get a little bit high and get on a streetcar and head downtown. Maybe have a beer somewhere. Not a bad plan, but... Of course, I got caught up in the Kerouac book and other things, including this. So I'm going to put an end to it. It's a 20-minute clip. That's what I do. I'll come back to the question, you know, basically why the beat. So let's just sort of take the hippies out of the equation for now. They're not really important. Timothy Leary was important, but he wasn't a hippie and didn't even like the hippies. You know, Allen Ginsberg, the individuals, I think, are important. Henry Miller, Timothy Leary... I'm almost hesitant to say Jack Kerouac. Why is that? Why would I be? That's, come on, man. Hey, he's left this behind. No, I do him. Oh, my goodness. And I, what an insult. I'm sorry, Jack. I'm really glad I'm reading Vanity of Duelos because it's like his autobiography told from 67, right near the end of his road, you know, of just, man, and he's already referring to hippies and he's looking at the past, but from that present situation, he was brutal in his treatment of Ginsberg. He described him on page, and it was cruel. He speaks much more highly of William Burroughs and him. And I'm just at the passage now. He's just met. It's the time of the murder, and damn it, there's that movie out starring the Harry Potter guy playing Ginsberg of this time of the... John Kammermer, whatever his name was, murder. Oh, where Kerouac was involved, knew the whole background. He's telling the story right at the point of that story. Well, holy shit. That alone is worth reading. So I do encourage people, don't just pick up a tired old copy of On the Road and think that's Jack Kerouac. Read about him, read about the Beats, read about the, you know, the artists of the 50s, but try and read a copy of Howl. People, even Anthony Marco is a fan of Howl, and understand that there were people whose voices were raised, and it's just wonderful that they still echo today. And perhaps that's what the Dixon James podcast is. It's an echo of different things. I really sincerely hope it is of value, because I really believe it is, and if it isn't, I'm crushed. And I know that's false, some vanity in there as well. Interesting reading about Kerouac's vanity. A good read. Recommended if you already know something about Kerouac. People like, what's his name out west? That clever little guy. You know, I'm talking about Adam Greatrix, my buddy. My adopted son, but he won't let me be his son anymore. He'd appreciate this very much. Hi, Adam. Love you guys. Bye for now.
American boy.
Well, it's official. Happy New Year. We are now 13 hours in to the year 2014. At least we are here in Toronto. Scarborough to be exact. Bluffers Park to be more specific. As planned, I sit here in the front seat of my car on a cold day. Should be a day to take a long walk, and my walks seem to have dropped off. Oh, it's cold, and I'm not wearing good boots, and oh, I think I'll just sit here. So, glad I didn't make that a New Year's resolution. I don't know that I made any in specific. There's the general lose 20 pounds, which will just get pushed into next year as well. I guess my wife asked me last night what my resolutions were, and I said, well, one of them is just, did I say something like not to grow old? And she said, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, you know, when people get old, you get kind of, it's not lazy, but it's just, you're not inclined to push yourself. You're not inclined to do something you might want to do, and if you're young, you just wouldn't think twice. You just get out and do it. But when you're a little older, you'd be a little bit more cautious, a little bit more, well, the default of just sitting at home in a warm house is just becomes easier, and you have to fight against that. Friend calls you up, do you want to go to the bar tonight? Maybe not. And I know that sounds like a pathetic excuse. Hey, it's probably a good thing not to go to the bar, but no, there's a danger. Here's an example of how much I enjoyed the weekend. I mean, it was a one-time only. It's probably the only time my life will ever happen, but the weekend I booked a flight and went up to Sault Ste. Marie to see Dave and Isabel, and I have just such a wonderful time there. It could have been so easy to make some excuse. Well, they didn't really invite me. I kind of invited myself, and, well, maybe some other time, or maybe we'll wait till the weather's nice, and you just end up not doing those things. So, latest in my mind, actually, and I mentioned it with Mara today, is taking a trip to Tennessee. And I would certainly, already in my mind, I've played out, we'll just, you know, contact Jason, say, can we get together just for a cup of coffee somewhere? You know, can you tear yourself away from your job just for a little bit, just for an hour, and just for a chat, see each other face-to-face? And then, of course, go to Nashville and book a hotel. Don't worry, Dave, we're not going to crash at your place, but look up Dave Delaney. And she said, yeah, that sounds great. And stretch the trip down, you know, a couple of days to get there, a couple to get back. So already that sort of hatched, it came out, it was actually verbalized. You can have an idea in your head, but it's when you verbalize it, it becomes a little more likely that it might happen. And then, holy shit, I've actually put it down in a recording in a Dixon James podcast. Fuck, I gotta go to Tennessee now. But that sounds like fun. So that's an example of, yeah, just do it, man, just do it. Never mind excuses. Do it while you can, because, man, you get older. My good buddy, I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but my good buddy, we'll call him Alvin. I referred to him as a guru in the past. The guy who I went to Mexico with in his big van, which we slept in the entire trip. Very seldom did we stay in a hotel. He's 71. So he's sort of the oldest of my good friends from going way back. And he's off for a two-month trip around Vietnam and Thailand and Japan. And I think, wow, good for you. Good for you. Damn it. You know, and he said, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this again. It does get a little harder, but he's doing it. And I just admire that. So I've got to keep that as a role model. Anyway, last night, New Year's Eve, traditional pattern my wife and I have had for several years now. We stay home. And we order a sushi or a maki tray from Ichiban. Although I'm afraid Ichiban is under new ownership, it seems. And if the quality wasn't quite as good, we might switch back to Niji. Not that you need to know that, but I'm just verbalizing it because it's true. We discussed that this morning. So we get our sushi tray for supper, and then at midnight, she makes tempura noodles. And the noodles, you know, are for the long life. And we've done this every year, and it's fabulous. My wife is a fabulous cook. And she did all the batter and fixed these things up and deep-fried shrimp and all these other goodies. And, oh, it was fabulous to have that at midnight and sit there till the clock struck 12. And before that, I had my son was going off to a party, loaded down with booze, and going off to a couple of parties, I guess. We had, of course, a bottle of bubbly, and then, because we still don't have cable and the internet, I thought, aha, I do have that little device that came with my Sony surround sound system, where you can plug in your iPod. And it took me a while to get it, and I realized I just had to reboot the iPod while it was, you know, installed, and it comes up on your screen. Wow, there it is, iPod front. What do you want to do? You want to play by artist? Playlist? Straight to Trent Mueller, the CD I've been talking about, which you heard in the background of the preceding clip, and blasted it. The album, the CD is called Lost. It is really good. And it's wonderful that this would be something my number two son turned me on to. And then, of course, that was followed by the live Van Morrison. Compliments of our good friend, yours and mine, a true artist, if ever there was any, in this internet podcasting field, Norm Augustinus. Thank you, Norm. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love it. And you'll probably hear a clip on this very podcast from Van Morrison live in San Francisco. What a concert that was. Wow. Right up there with the Leonard Cohen we heard recently. So that was just nice. It was a very, very nice evening. My son said I should have taken her to go and ring the bell down on Lake Ontario where it's freezing and it's midnight and you got to walk and park and stand in a line with 100 people and wait your turn to ring the bell. And he said, Dad, do it. Don't be so selfish. She wants to do it. And I'm thinking, but I don't want to do it. And do I give in to my son who's putting pressure, or is my wife really, it's not that big a deal? And it turned out, no, it wasn't a deal breaker. It didn't ruin her New Year's by not standing out in the cold off Lake Ontario. Driving home, you know. Ugh. Anyway, it was a very, very pleasant, and it's a great way to start off the day. And tonight we're going to our favorite Dragon Pearl reservation, 6 o'clock. A very, very good Chinese buffet with lots of specialties and roast beef and sushi. And oh my God, one of our favorite places. So that's it. I actually wanted to talk all about the beats, but I just wanted to get this sort of this spontaneous stuff out first. It's weird. Two cars pulled up on either side of me. Usually you're alone here at Bluffers. And, you know, I like the space, and I like the fact that there's nobody else around. And now suddenly there's cars beside me. But it's not summer. Everybody's windows are up, and there's no problems. I hope yours was satisfactory. Enjoyable, and I hope you have a good, make the most of 2014. I like the even numbers, so this will be a good one. My son is coming back this month, number one son, Jerry, from Vancouver for a visit. That's good. Both boys have birthdays in January. Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of people out to, try and walk in the snow. She's leaning on my car. It's okay, but just don't spill your coffee on it. Thank you. Anyway, the beats. Maybe I'll just take a pause here and go and find a spot, because I've brought all the copies along with me in my bag. I've went down. I finished, of course, Vanity of Doulas. That was another task for New Year's Eve, to finish the Vanity of Doulas. I picked up and went down to my basement bar, and oh, how wonderful it is to have a bar where you can go down and pick up books. And, of course, by the time you're my age, you forget what you've read. Even if you have read it, you're not going to remember all the details. And you also, my wife agreed, you read things with a new level of maturity, and you actually get it in a different way. So I have in my hand Jack Kerouac, Visions of Cody, with an introduction by Allen Ginsberg. Now, this is a book written 51-52, just before On the Road, so it's almost like a prelude to On the Road. He's sort of finding his voice. This novel, written in 1951-52, was for many years an underground legend, but was not published in its entirety until 1972, and that's Kerouac died in 69, so they're looking for money, right? Written before On the Road, it is the work in which Kerouac first found his true voice. Visions of Cody is a sprawling hymn to the America of rail yards, diners, highways, bars, and flop houses, experienced by Jack Dulaz, that's the name he uses for himself, the narrator, and his restless fellow pilgrim, Cody Pomeroy, barely disguised versions of Kerouac himself and the legendary Neil Cassidy. Now, any listener worth his salt will know who Neil Cassidy is. Thank you. Using his extraordinary gifts as narrative for narrative description and reminiscence to the maximum, as well as transcripts of tape-recorded marathon conversations, Kerouac makes of Cody an authentic hero, prototype of the Beat Generation. Sounds good. Fine print, and there are whole sections, the whole middle of it, is just a transcript of a tape recording, which... I'm flipping through, like, there's got to be 100 pages of that, which I have read before. But, you know, probably both them high and just, it's sort of a way of explaining. And just what it was like to be those way. And, of course, you know all to be that way, to be high and grooving. Now, Jack Kerouac didn't write this book for money. He wrote it for love. He gave it away to the world, not even for fame, but as an explanation and prayer to his fellow mortals and gods. So there we go. Anyway, that's on the to-read list. I brought with me Desolate Angel, which I referred to in previous, because there were previous podcasts, because there are quotes here I really wanted to share. And, of course, I didn't mark any of them, so I'm going to have to go through that and find them. And then the one in my hand, also picked up from my bar by Gregory Stevenson, who is a professor at a university. Gregory Stevenson is a lecturer in the Department of English at Roskilde University in Denmark. And so this guy knows his stuff, and it's pretty interesting that he's writing. And I'm just reading the foreword to this book. It's called The Daybreak Boys, which is what John Clelan Holmes wanted to call his first novel, which became Go, which is a word for the Beats. Go, just keep going. Referring to dock workers of generation previous to them. And the publisher wouldn't let him use the title, so... Stevenson took it for his book, The Daybreak Boys, but it's referring to the Beats and the Beat Generation. And the introduction is excellent. If you really want to have an understanding of the Beats... Now, you'll never find this book. You know, believe me, I've been collecting my Beat books for more than 40 years. It's absolute gold, the way you describe them. So let me find... All right, be patient. Let me just put this here, right? In their writings, the Beats share a sense that the crisis of Western civilization, as evinced by the appalling slaughter and devastation of the world wars, by the breakdown of values, the decay of ideals, and by the spiritual sterility of the modern world, is rooted in our culture's misguided faith in rationality and materialism. Now, that rings so true today. Our misguided faith in rationality and materialism, in the analytical faculties of the mind, in the narrow dogmatism of logical positivism and scientism, and in our identification with the conscious self, the ego. To redeem and revitalize the life of our culture and our individual lives, the Beats propose the cultivation of the energies of the body and the instincts, of the unconscious and the spirit. Now, I get that in a way that I wouldn't have got that 20 years ago, but that's this pushback that I'm talking about. They're looking at society, they're seeing what's wrong, and they're saying there's got to be another way. It's almost hearkening back to other times. Accordingly, the literature of the Beats characteristically records a descent into the darkness and the depths of the psyche, a confrontation with the baleful and the benevolent forces of these deeper strata, a struggle, sometimes prolonged or recurrent, and then, ultimately, a renewal of the self and an ascending impulse towards equilibrium or transcendence. The central and essential process of Beat consciousness, the downward quest for identity and vision, the beat beatific movement, the journey through night to daybreak, may be seen to represent the foundation for certain common traits of the literature of the Beat generation and for what may be termed the Beat aesthetic. And it just goes on. And every paragraph is written like that, is deep, this guy gets it. And he does refer to the fact that afterwards, the critics of the day were so quick to poo-poo these guys and laugh at them and make fun of them, you know, and just give them such a hard time. It's beautiful because he's talking about preceding generations, too. And he's talking about the lost generation. Of course, we're hearing about F. Scott Fitzgerald and those people. The forebears, precursors, ancestors, and antecedents of the Beat generation include the lost generation, hipsterism, which has become a dirty word, bohemianism, radicalism, dadaism, and surrealism. The Beat inheritance from the lost generation is less from its illustrious figures, such as Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and Dos Passos, than from the more radical wing. Okay, and in particular, he mentions Henry Miller. Thank you. Goes on about there. He does a wonderful part of actually dividing the times. I'm flipping through here, of actually dating when did the Beats, the generations. And he said there was in two movements, two times. Description of Beat, which you can look up for yourself. Yeah, here it is. The life of the Beat generation can be divided into two distinct periods or phrases. Now, I've never heard this before, and I think it's wonderful that this guy has done that. He's clearly an academic, taking this very seriously. The underground period from 1944 to 1956, and the public period, when we all heard about them, from 1956 to 62. These dates are, of course, approximate, but they reflect something of the changing mood and character of the Beat movement and the gathering and dispersal of its energies. Following Kerouac's recollection, I have taken 1944 as the point of beginning. Already in the early 50s, certain works of the Beat generation, Kerouac's Town the City, Holmes Go, William Burroughs' Junkie, 1953, began to appear, and so on and so on. Anyway, I don't know, some of you will say this is boring, stop it, dude, and others might say, wow, I want more. I guess I'm just happy to say I found something in life that excites me, that turns me on, that, man, if there was a course offered on Beat literature, the Beats, I would sign up, I would go, I would be a keener student, and I would learn a lot. I don't consider myself an expert at all. I just am very intrigued, and I do get and understand and respect them. And again, as individuals, they were failed. I mean, Kerouac was a mess, as I said before. But damn it, he did it. And when you read the ending of The Vanity of Duologues, it's very, very touching. Like, he's seeing himself for the failure he's become as just a drunk living with his mother. But he described just prior to that the death of his father of cancer, the horrible death. And his father making him promise, you will always have to look after my mare. And Kerouac did. That was like a guiding force in his life to always care. And his Catholicism, you know, never quite being able to shake it, maybe some of the guilt and so on. It really, The Vanity of Duologues is just, if I've badmouthed Kerouac in the past, and I do many times, of course I have no right at all to say anything about him, but I gained more respect again for the man as the artist, as the man who suffered and put his suffering down. And this was his mission. Like, he was driven to do what he did, and he paid the price. He suffered. So, anyway, that's from the Daybreak Boys. And I'm holding, of course, this huge copy of Desolate Angel, and where do I start? There were so many great passages, and I should have marked them. I should have taken the time to say, okay, you want to come back to that one, because that really sums it up. So I apologize for not having this prepared. And maybe I'll come back a little later on, because I've been wanting to share a couple of things. Oh, I love the connections. You know, the Evergreen Review, the Whole Earth Catalog. That's something we used to read. We used to sit with the Barstool Buddha, get high, and then just flip through copies of the Whole Earth Catalog.
by Stuart Brand. And this is sort of following, you know, that 60s period. Sorry, that doesn't make for good listening. Ah, there's a picture of Kerouac and his beloved cat. Chapter titles, It's True You Can't Go Home Again. Source notes. All right, so I guess that's it for now for the New Year's podcast and for Scarborough Dude. A happy man that I have something so rich in my life. And of course, by that, you say, what? You mean the Beats? And yeah, the Beats and my library and my bar. But my family, my sons and my wife and the richness and how, you know, there's life, again, a Beat theme, life is suffering, life is pain. You are going to get, you can't love without hurt, without feeling hurt, without being hurt. And just the suffering that is life. And you can't shoo it away and live on just this artificial, superficial level of blocking out reality. But somehow you have to find that balance. Remember earlier, I guess the preceding podcast, I referred to that balance of holding on and letting go. Well, I'm holding on to my Beats. I'm not letting go. And it gives me joy to just look at the copies of these books. This is why I can never be an e-reader person. I need to hold these books in my hands. I need to look at the covers and see the words, see the titles. I just need that three-dimensional element to literature, to the Beats. Thank you. Sorry, I've gone on a bit too far. And we'll be back soon, but I just want you to know, for what it's worth, I'm a happy dude. Oh, yeah. Here's some music. Bye for now.
Region west of the Pecos River. Virtually beyond the reach of the authorities, the railroads, then pushing their way west, attracted the most vicious characters in the country. It was said that all civilization and law stuck back at the Pecos. It took one man, a lone storekeeper who was sick of the lawlessness, to change all this. His name was Judge Roy Bean.
Named Ramblin' Bob, who used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Holy, 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 holy. Called poker, pinochle, whist, and yoke, but shooting dice was his greatest game. Now he's downtown in jail, nobody to go his bail. The judge done said that he refused a fine. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Ollie, 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 went out last Tuesday, met a girl named Susan. I told her I was the swellest man around. We started to spend my money, then she started to call me honey. We took in every cabaret in town. We're in the jailhouse now. We're in the jailhouse now. I told the judge right to his face, we didn't like to see this place. We're in the jailhouse now. Ollie, 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 Ollie.
Check, check. Yeah, pardon the background noise, that's our furnace. And after 6 days with no furnace, I ain't about to shut this baby down. No siree. This is a change. I'm sitting in the basement, my basement bar, right by my library, right by my beat selection. And oh boy, Tim hit the tambourine. I said, beat. Thank you. It just gives me such joy to look at this collection. Especially when I got like about three copies of the same book with different versions. Oh, man. It's just so nice. I just want to bring you up to date. This was the ice storm. No, that was the last episode. It was the ice storm episode. What the hell is this one? Oh, this is the no internet episode. But they came back today. They came 30 minutes late. And for making me wait an extra 30 minutes, they knocked $25 off my bill. They were going to charge $50 surcharge for me going over my data. And, of course, they reversed that. And who knows what else I'll get back. But anyway, the truth is, it was such a blessing having no internet for 2 weeks. So it was an extra week. We had the powers off for 6 days. Then the internet was off for the whole time. So from Saturday to Saturday, basically, 2 weeks. And it was terrific. I mean, mind you, I had a cell phone and I was using my hotspot and I could get on. Nobody else in the family could. And I could go to my office, I could go to the college, so I didn't suffer much. But the thing was, I didn't have TV. And I've told you before how I'm just addicted. Man, nothing goes on and doesn't go off till bedtime. And it was wonderful being without the television. But the cable man came today and reattached the line that had come down, and we're all set. It works. I had the TV on, made sure it worked, and then shut that off. I went right back to finish off this podcast for you because I hate loose ends. It's like that cable that was dangling from the wire. I feel that way about clips for the podcast. You know, they're all over the place. So I've just got to get rid of these things, tie them all together. So I just cobbled together whatever it was you just heard prior to this ending clip. And now I'm going to end this podcast. I want to do a little bit of what I call housekeeping. First of all, I'm not going to stick to any one day for putting these episodes out. You listen when it's convenient for you, if it's convenient for you. And by my goodness, me oh my, skip if you need to. I just hate the thought of having a whole podcast recording and then holding it recorded, then holding it back and not releasing it in case I got hit by a bus. Because nobody would know to, oh my God, there's probably one more in the can. Where is it? Nobody in my family would know. And none of you out there would ever get it. So when these things are done, bam, I'm putting them up. You decide what you want to do about that. Number two. You know how I've been going on about this bird feeder and how wonderful it was? Well, the other day is I took a look out the window to see if the cardinal was back. And, of course, the cardinal comes, a pair of cardinals come on a regular basis, pretty well daily. I looked down below, And there were rats. Now, I told my wife, get a hold of your tongue. I told my wife there were big mice. But in fact, I would categorize these as rats. And there was, I watched today again. They love the fact, because the birds peck away, and they spit out or drop down things they don't want, and it stays on the snow. Well, the squirrels come by and eat them up, and then these little rats have built little holes in the ground. They never venture more than a foot away from an escape hole, because they're out in daylight. And I've noticed when I've been out back near where our, you know, the composter is, that suddenly there'll be something scurrying past my feet really fast. And I know, but I've pretended not to see it. Well, now I'm looking out the window, looking down at, you know, dark gray, black rats against the white snow. They're there. And it just, I can't poison them, because I'd be poisoning the birds and the squirrel too. And I wouldn't want to do that. It's a horrible death. So I'm going to have to get a live trap and take them to the ravine and let them go. And I just keep putting that off. You know, if only they were cute. You look down and they sort of were, when you just, they're peeking out there. They come out and they scurry a little bit and they grab a little seed. And then they scurry back down into this, scurry back down into this hole they've dug in the snow. But they're rats, and you can't have rats near your house. I know I've got a few in the garage, because you see the little, you know, things they've been digging through. So, ugh. Anyway, that kind of spoils the bird for me. I said, oh, well, maybe we should take it down. And I'm thinking, no, I don't want to give in, but that's what our neighbor did. Our neighbor took theirs down because it was attracting rats. Isn't that a bummer? Like, you have this happy moment of something beautiful. And I thought this was going to be... This was my connection to my father, who loved the birds and would feed them. And this was sort of a nice connection, a thing to do. You look out the kitchen window when you're washing the dishes or something, and there are these beautiful birds. Now I know there's rats down there. Jesus, eh? That's life. That's life. Listen, I recorded, or I made a note of pages to read you about the Beats, and I have the feeling, I don't know, some of you will be saying, oh my God, not again. It's beautiful. I've got three books in my lap. Desolate Angels, which I finished. The Daybreak Boys, which is too academic for me to read the whole thing, but his introduction was excellent. And then the one I bought myself for Christmas, Acid Christ, about Kesey. The beauty of these three books is they all overlap. So you're reading about Neil Cassidy in each one of them, you know, and... So I marked out passages, actually Kerouac's death, and I haven't got Kesey's death yet. He's just got on the bus further. It's turning out to be a good read. Very, very interesting character. You know, the guy wrote one through flew over the cuckoo's nest. I am sorry. Listen, I'm not drunk. I'm not stoned. My mouth just isn't working. I'm out of practice. I just assume most of my listeners will sort of know the background to all these characters, but that might not be true. So let me find page 13 here in The Daybreak Boys and see if this is a clip that's worth reading to you. Because, again, it's a little bit of background. I love my research. And these are books I could read over and over again and discover them anew. Let's try this passage, okay? And this is from The Daybreak Boys. Fast-moving and far-ranging, the Beats shot like a comet across the placid cultural skies of the late 50s and early 60s, outshining for a time many of the fixed stars and familiar constellations. Now that's a good line. Then, like a comet, they seemed to blaze away again. However, their exit was only apparent. In fact, they continued to pursue their eccentric orbit in the heavens. They had only become less visible. And comet-like, too, the Beats were an omen, their appearance portending the advent of a time of upheaval and change. "We are in the vanguard of a new religion," prophesies Jack Kerouac, and he may yet be proven right. What is clear, though, is that the Beats were in the vanguard of some sweeping and far-reaching changes in the arts and in the social sphere. The first phase of the impact of the Beat Generation was the creation of what may be called the second generation Beats, younger men and women who, in the late 50s and early 60s, responded to and were inspired by the Beat Generation. Some notable second generation Beats would include Ed Saunders, Ken Kesey, Ted Berrigan, Emmett Grogan, Bob Dylan, Richard Brautigan, and Richard Farina. Their writings and activities, together with those of the original Beats, helped to catalyze the second phase of the impact of the Beat Generation, the counterculture of the late 60s and early 70s. Now, let me just finish it off here. Beat Generation figures such as Allen Ginsberg, Neil Cassidy, Michael McClure, and Gary Snyder were clearly prototypes, midwives and mentors of the freaks of the counterculture, and together with certain of the other Beats, they became cultural heroes of the new generation. The influence of the Beat Generation may be discerned in nearly every aspect of the counterculture, the rejection of commercial values and of conceptions of career and status, the interest in vision-inducing drugs as a mode of personal and spiritual exploration, and the corresponding interest in Oriental and primitive religions, the centrality of rhythmic music and Dionysian ecstasy, the pacifist anarchist political orientation, Ginsberg, Ferlinghetti, the concern with ecology, McClure, Snyder, the emphasis on natural and primitive models of community and the idea of tribalism, Snyder, and of course the prevalent anti-rational, anti-technological, visionary and spiritual disposition of the freaks. So I'll stop there. We've run out of time, but that was just the one passage, and I have much more. But I hope that sort of answers the point I was trying to make, is that the Beats gave birth to the hippies. The hippies were the followers, but the Beats spawned another generation of thinkers and writers and artists. And gradually, they'd beaten the path, and the rest followed. So I'm going to leave you there. Dixon Jane's podcast number, 435 maybe, and there will be more, and after this we'll maybe you'll hear a Talking to Tim, if you're interested in those. Gonna get in touch with the old friend Tim Coyne, scheduled for today, but technological issues got in the way. So boys and girls, take care of yourselves, and come back for more, because I'll be here again in a week. Bye for now.
Inquiries, please remain on the line and a representative will be with you shortly.